Want to be a part of the show? Hit us up on the Fan Outfitters Twitter feed at ESPN680.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of the V-Show, ESPN 680, 105.7. Everybody out there, including me, because I'm allowed to have chicken on this Vitality, which I can't wait to tell you about, by the way. I really can't later. It's unbelievable. But I don't want to start the show with a spot for them. But I do want to thank the folks at Wingzone. Adam and his staff dropped off Wingzone Catering. The ESPN specials, 10 boneless wings, wedges, and a drink for just $9.39. Only if you walk into the store and scream at the top of your lungs, ESPN Louisville. That's good 7 days a week or until they throw you out for disrupting all the other patrons.
Send us a video of that, and we'll give you an additional prize.
Pre-order your catering from Wingzone for the big game next week. Call ahead or pick on game day, or pick up on game day. Pick on game day. Order online, wingzone.com, two Louisville locations in Hikes Point and Hess Lane near U of L.
Just send mean tweets to Reese Davis or something?
Who?
Pick on game day?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was like, yeah, tell Jay Billis to go. I mean,
Maria Taylor, you smell.
You Long Island son of a... last night's game, easy to comment on. Easy to comment on and acknowledge the fact that it's going to be just another one of those games I warned you about yesterday, which is that it's going to be, you know, a million close games in the league almost every night. I offer as Exhibit A last night in the ACC, where the games were all across the board extremely close, including a double overtime game. With North Carolina, that would be this one here, Georgia Tech and Louisville, of course, played to a 4-point game. Syracuse and Notre Dame played to a 2-point game. North Carolina and Virginia Tech played a double overtime 2-point game, and Pitt beat Boston College by, you guessed it, 2 points. So Louisville's 4-point game was double the margin of any of the other games in the league. So that's the way it's going to be. Everybody's getting peanuts. And if you want to have a discussion about that, you can. That's fine. But that is what is going on. So given that, you know, there will be people who will look at that again and say, well, you know, they didn't dominate that team. They should dominate that team. And I won't look at it that way, not because I'm being a denier, but because to me, I don't think it's as meaningful as other ways to discuss it. You can say bull spit. I'm denied. The way to look at it is the way I look at it. Whatever. Here's what I would suggest to you. The first half, they were not particularly good, Louisville. And here's, again, what's easy to say. They were really good or they were not very good. What are you talking about? I said before the game, not because it was some tremendous insight, but because knowing them and knowing the stats and knowing how Georgia Tech played, there were three things that Louisville was going to have to do. They were going to have to turn turnovers into points. Georgia Tech has, I mean, unless Georgia Tech was spectacular at doing something out of the ordinary, they're going to turn the ball over. That's what they do. They average 17 turnovers a game. So they're going to turn it over. Can you turn those turnovers into points in the first half? The answer to that would have been no. Secondly, they had to play good defense to give themselves clean rebounds. Because if you get clean rebounds, what does that lead to? It leads to good, effective, quick transition, fast break. Louisville's fast break for the last 2 months, I've been boasting about it. Their fast break in the first half was terrible. They had 4 fast break opportunities and had basically, I don't think they scored on any of them. Their fast break points for the whole night was 6. They gave up 7 fast break points, only scored 6. So especially, I don't think they had any fast break points in the first half. So they did a terrible job of doing that as well. So they did not do a good job in transition. They didn't do a good job in their defense. They gave up 62% shooting in the first half. Very hard to run a break when you're taking the ball out of the net. And the third thing is they had to really dominate the backboards. They out-rebound their opponents by, what is it, like seven a game? Five or seven? I can't remember. I think it's five maybe. And Georgia Tech barely out-rebounds their opponents. And the first half, they got out-rebounded and gave up a lot of second-chance points relative to what they did. So they went in down six, and it actually got to 11. When the game turned around, what turned around? All the three things I just told you. Their defense picked up appreciably. They held them to 33% shooting in the second half. They started to turn those turnovers into points. They wound up getting 13 points off turnovers. Georgia Tech only had seven. They were behind in that category at the intermission. And the rebounding was not great. They still got out-rebounded 34-33, but they scored 15 second-chance points. Georgia Tech only had nine. And they turned what was an 11-point deficit into an 11-point lead, and that was a 22-point swing because they did the things that we talked about in the pregame that they had to do. Now, why? Now, I get this, and if you feel this way, that's okay. The question could legitimately be asked, all right, if they know that's what they had to do, how come they didn't do it in the first half? Fair enough. I would suggest there definitely was a little bit of a Duke hangover. I watched them in pregame layups. They were not screwing around. They weren't. You know, I would not have looked at that and said, oh, my God, this team is not ready. They came out. They scored. If you remember, they were prepared for Georgia Tech zone. They hit people right in the places where they wanted to. That's a sign the team was prepared. But I don't think they were emotionally, as connected with what this league is every night. Fans may not, you know, like I said, you can feel how you want to, but the numbers say, I don't care. Take any team in the league on any given night. It's hard to believe this, but Carolina right now is the worst team in the league. They're the only team in the league with one win. And would you look past them? Would you think, oh, that's a bop? No. I mean, they went double overtime last night. So every game, you're going to have to be ready to play. Notre Dame's fourth from the bottom, and they, you know, gave Louisville a hell of a game. So that's just the way it's going to be. If you want to lament that there's not, you know, this is, not only is there no 38-0 team, but Louisville's not going to be one of those 38-0 teams, then okay, I get it. But it's just I'm looking at it what it really is, and what I'm seeing is a team that I mean, you could say Josh Pastner is a nice guy, which he is, and so he's being polite. But his comments after the game, I expect to see that team in Atlanta at the Final Four, you know, which Chris had a laugh at. Good, you know, that was you know, like har har. But I'm telling you, coaches really do think, and it's not like they're trying to say it because they want to put pressure on Chris so that he'll stumble and then fans will say, oh, he underachieved. They really think they're good. Mike Bray, unprovoked, stopped me on the way at the Notre Dame game. Said, man, they're really good. Again, you can think what you want of Josh, but he's generally a nice guy, and that's what he thinks. So, so that's my point. I walk away. I thought they were a team that has a chance to make a deep run in March. I still do. They did not play well in the first half, and they have to take accountability for that because they were all things that the game plan said would be important, and they did none of them. If they did even a couple of them, they might have had the lead. They did none of them. And you got to give Georgia Tech credit. They don't have any depth at all, but the five guys who start are not bad. I mean, DeVoe's a pretty good player, and the kid Banks is Chris calls him a load down there. If you watch how he plays, he goes and parks his ass 3 feet from the basket at both ends. Defense, he's standing there kind of like your landlord, where's the rent? And then on offense, he just stands there and he's hard to move unless you grab him and push him out and get a foul. So he's always running, slapping at rebounds. He had seven rebounds, four were offensive. He's a good player. Alvarado's a terrific player. The kid's about Paul Rogers' height, and he had 10 rebounds last night. 10 rebounds, and he made the first two threes of the game, set the tone for their team.
Paul can get boards, though. I mean,
Paul can get you. Paul's got crazy stupid ups. But, you know, but the fact is they're not a bad – I don't think that – statistically, they're not the worst team in the league. They have three wins. There's five teams behind them, or four anyway. They have fewer. You can say, well, they're not winning those games. You just got through telling us the bottom line is to win the game. True. That's absolutely true. But their margin, if you look at the games they played, have been very close. And they also, incredibly, have won very well on the road for a team that with a losing record, no matter what Locke says, that's unusual. This is an unusual league this year in the ACC. The visiting team is winning a lot, but I mean, the Big Ten is a little bit more common to me, where the visiting team might, you know, have to play seven guys and get 5 minutes of free possessions to make it a game because they're getting their doors blown off. But that's beside the point. That's another topic about winning on the road and all that stuff. I'm just talking about what it means for Louisville. The first half, I'm not going to try and convince you they were good, but I'm telling you why they weren't good. So rather than just be, you know, if team misses shots, you say, oh, well, they weren't good. And if they make shots, you say, oh, they were great. And sometimes coaches will say that's fool's gold. Well, they weren't making shots, and they weren't playing well. Their defense was really poor, and they were not – they had fast break opportunities they did nothing with. They started to run the fast break like they did early in the year, which was just chaotic, bad spacing, turning the ball back over. But then in the second half, I mean – they were much better at all of those things. They scored off turnovers. Their defense went from giving up 62% to 33%. They got to the glass. And you know, I'll tell you another factor, which is fans have talked about it at length, and this was a game to celebrate it. It was a hard game. It was a physical game. There was a lot of fouls called, and that's because there were a lot of fouls committed. And they basically only play six guys any meaningful minutes. They play the five guys who started in the transfer, Bubba Parham. That's it. They play six. Louisville went 10 deep, but nine, really. I mean, you can't – Nickelberry, no disrespect, but only played 45 seconds. But they go 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 deep. And every one of those guys, off the top of my head, I can think of, had plays the way they made a contribution. There was a stretch where they were struggling, and they started to go inside. Banks had four fouls, and Enoch scored. Jordan had a bad shooting night but didn't sulk about it, had seven rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a lot of rebounds he didn't get credited for, but he was in there and knocking them around, battling, and it wound up being, you know, deflected. A pinball rebound went out of bounds. It became a team rebound that Louisville got. Darius Perry was consistently the guy who played good defense all night, and in the second half, he was terrific. They put him on whoever they put him on, but especially Alvarado. He would not let Alvarado get in the lane, and that kid did everything he could. The left-handed kid, too, DeVoe. I mean, everybody all game long, he was tricking into, you know, thinking, well, maybe he's going to go right, and then he'd come back left, and boom, he'd go right to the basket. And I watched Darius, and he put on a defensive clinic with that. He just never bit. The kid turned to his left, and Darius was like, guess who? Here I am. He dribbled the ball right into him. Darius took it once. Very, very good defensive game. He didn't shoot it. Well, Darius shoots the three much better off of a pass than off the dribble. A couple times they play way off him, so he takes the dribble and he shoots it, and those were not good shots. But the first three he made was the exact kind of one he's got to get. They still are playing off a little bit, but they skip the ball to him on the weak side. He steps up and knocks it down. So he was his main contribution, though, was defense, as was Fresh's. Fresh, also, if Darius was number one in defense, Fresh was number two. He was very good. And again, late in the game, I don't know why, but it seems like every time the game's getting wobbly late, he finds a way to get in the lane and make a layup. He did it again. Dwayne Sutton was not very impactful shooting the ball. I would think he needed to look for his shot a little more, arguably. He only took four shots, but he added six rebounds, three assists, had two steals, and made no turnovers. That's a pretty good day's work for a guy who doesn't really give a damn about his personal point stats. So, yeah, you know, you can say, oh, my God, Dwayne only had 3 points. Yeah, well, if that's all you're looking at, you're missing what he brings to the table. Malik, down the stretch, he only shot 7 of 12 from the free throw line, which is not great, but, boy, he made some big ones late. And defensively, he's the better defender. Stevens is probably the better offensive player. And Malik had three blocks in the game, had six rebounds, did score 13 points, and was just a big presence inside and made a big difference in their defense. David Johnson, another solid offensive game, such a creative passer, able to carry the ball to the rim, got 10 points, but what I liked about his game is he had three steals in this game, and that usually is effective for them in transition. When you get the steal, the live ball rebounds, the live ball turnovers, you can do something with it. Sam Williamson is a guy who's not going to put up gaudy point totals yet, but he looked confident last night. He was demanding the ball. He was open on the wing for the three. They hit it. He caught it. He knocked it down. He's always going to have some numbers in the rest of the stat line. That's just how he plays. He had 3 rebounds, an assist, a steal. He's not afraid. He gets in there. He'll mix it up. It was a game. That's the kind of toughness Chris is talking about. Not standing over guys and talking smack and pounding your chest, but not being afraid to stick your nose right in the middle of things and doing that. And so he contributed. They fouled Ryan late in the game when they were trying to press and make a comeback. He stepped up, calm as can be, knocked down a couple of free throws. He also had a steal in the game and an assist. And, you know, everybody pitched in. So there's no question that the depth was a factor last night. And that's a reason to be encouraged. You know, to be discouraged is still, though, that the way they get to struggle in the first half, how they could not have taken to heart at least one of the 3 key elements to the game and won that battle. They lost all 3 of them, and that's how they found themselves down. And then it got even worse in the second half. They went down 11. But the reason, again, because this is a fair point. Somebody made the point last year. I guess their record was exactly the same. But the difference was there were a lot of these games that they won in this stretch that were the carbon copies of the games they lost in the stretch late in the year last year. And I think they've matured from that. I think they're tougher mentally. You saw the way they came back in those games against Pitt and Notre Dame. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the margin is small. The margin is small. Ask Auburn. Ask Ohio State. I mean, it takes you 3 weeks and you play yourself into anonymity again after being discussed in the top 5, or in Ohio State's case, discussed as a number 1. So that's how college basketball is right now. But the fact is, I would be discouraged if the things that they needed to do to win the game, you walked away and said, "Oh, they can't do it. They just can't do that." They can. They could do all the things that they needed to do to win last night. You want to be discouraged that they didn't do it for 40 minutes? Fair. But they did do it when the game was on the line, and that's what turned the game around. And ultimately, and I know some people don't want to hear it, they won. I mean, there's a whole bunch of teams right now that are going through that, and when they struggle at the end of the night, they lose. The countless times, more so far this year, that, you know, top 5 teams have lost to unranked teams, I think, than, I don't even know, maybe the most in history. Top unranked teams beaten ranked teams has become commonplace. That's how small the margin is, and they find a way to win. But, you know, Chris will be the first to tell you. I mean, he was pissed off about the first half because for the thing I talked about, if you're playing well, or you're at least making a commitment to try and do the things that you know are central to your game plan, and you just, you know, the other guy has scholarships too and good players, and and they were playing well. Georgia Tech played well. What they were doing, which was very smart, was they were running ball screens with guys. Most teams run a ball screen with the 1 and the 5. That's the traditional way to do it, and many teams will play it like Louisville will, which is they won't switch that one. They'll switch any screen that involves the 1, 2, 3, or 4 man, but not the one that involves the point guard and the center. They don't want the center trying to guard the point guard. So what he's supposed to do is make a hard hedge, come out really high, and buy time for the point guard's primary defender to fight over the screen, get out, and then reconnect with him defensively. And, you know, the weak side people, the rotation, you probably have seen it. The weak side guy drops down to the post, and then when he leaves his man for just a moment on the wing, and then the big man gets back to the post man, and the guy from the weak wing goes back and picks up his man. It's got to be done quickly, but you don't get hurt with it all that much, especially as you get more experience with it. Louisville did early in the year a little bit, but they've gotten better at it, so they haven't gotten hurt that much with it. But all the other screens, they switch. So what they were doing for much of the game was they were running ball screens without the center, knowing that Louisville would switch it. And if you do that, then you know that they're going to be able to create the matchup they want. And that was, and that is, you know, again, I don't feel like I'm speak very carefully because with good reason, he has such a great fan base. David Johnson's a special talent. When he carries the ball to the rim, it's majestic. But if you didn't notice, man, he was getting, they were going around him like a statue. And that was because they would take who they wanted to attack him, have Johnson's man set the screen for whoever they wanted, Alvarado or one of the other penetrating guys, usually Alvarado or DeVoe, and then they'd get him on that match, and then they would just go by him. And it was causing a lot of problems for them until, you know, he got in foul trouble and they had to take him out. And that's why Chris Late, when they did build the lead, played Perry and Kimball, because those guys were the best defenders. Dwayne didn't even have a great night on him, unusual, uncharacteristically. He was okay, but they were getting beat. The kid, DeVoe, could have announced on the PA, I'm going to go left. I shall now go left. I will do a number of things to try to convince you I'm not going left, but ultimately I'll be going left. And yet they couldn't stop him in the first half. So, you know, that is really what the whole thing was, and it was a good game plan. If you watched Pastner, he looked like a guy with a video game, you know, playing with the controller. He was pointing you here, you there, all right, now go. And then what they do is you come off that screen, and then it doesn't mean he's got to take the shot. But now, it's like I say all the time, you get the merry-go-round started. You know, you get around that screen, and then since that guy can't just play him one-on-one, then, you know, once they switch, now you got the matchup you want. You can't play that guy straight up. Somebody's got to come and help. And you saw how many times Alvarado got in there, made the little bounce pass, and Banks dunked it. It was good. It was good coaching. It was good strategy. They're not the worst team in the league. I'm sorry. They're not. And they played well in the first half. But Louisville dug down. I don't know. You keep asking me that. I don't know, Nick. Somebody who's behind them in the standings. Pick somebody. I'm just saying they're fifth from the bottom. They're not the worst team.
Why do you
get so mad? Because you derail. It's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is Louisville right now. There's my point about analyzing the game would have no different bearing if I picked Carolina as the worst team or Wake as the worst team. Nothing. Has nothing to do with it. So it's not worth spending a time on it. That's why. Okay? The point I'm making is they are not a horrible team where you say, well, how could they even stay with us? They've won three road games on the league. They've been competitive with everybody in the league, and they played well last night, and their game plan made sense. So, you know, the thing that is, I'm sure, frustrating to fans is when they see them shooting 63%, they want some thing they can sink their teeth in as an adjustment. Oh, we went to our 1-3-1, or we went to, oh, then we started trapping and the game turned around. That's a way to coach. There are guys who do that. There are guys that have four or five defenses in their pocket because that's what they believe. And there are guys like Chris who don't believe that. Their belief is, why should I play my second or third or fourth best defense when I can always play my best defense? And they spend so much time, and the numbers back it up, that is their best defense. Statistically, they won't play the other one very much, so they play it. But the adjustments that were made were subtle adjustments. And that's one of the reasons that Steven came out. They told the postmen, you've got to get out there, get in a low position, bend your knees. I don't know if they showed it on TV because it was right in front of us, so I could hear every word, literally right in front of me. He was telling Steven, you got to get wide on that screen and bend your knees and get down, son. You got to get down, son, and force that guy out. And he was very frustrated because that was the adjustment they made at halftime. Really extend on the hedge for the big guys, make that dribbler go out higher like Virginia plays it, and so they can't play downhill. When they screen with the five, the one where he hedges and doesn't switch. So, you know, he did a good job of that. And then Darius did a good job of getting over the screens quicker. So whether it was, you know, if it was a 1-5 situation, if the guard gets over the, you can't just dump it in the big man's lap and say, okay, fella, big fella, push him out there to midcourt and give me 15 seconds to get over the screen. No, he's trying to buy you a second or two. And when you get hung up in that screen like you're stuck in the jungle, it's not fair to ask him to be able to do that. So Darius was, I watched him about three or four possessions, man. They could not pick him. He was just, whoop, stepping over the top of the screen. And the big guy had an easy job because he didn't have to worry about really leaving his man for very long. So it's a team thing. The, you know, pack line, like all defenses, is team oriented. It's not just one guy. But that's one of the reasons Darius played so many minutes. And he was, Chris made that point, and I agree with him. He was the one emotionally invested in defending right from the start. The other guys, not so much. It took him a while. And I said, I'm not excusing it at all. And if you want to say, well, the coach's job is to make sure they're ready, okay, I don't care what, you know, whatever. I'm not here to persuade you. I'm here to just tell you, watching them, it's nice. There's a very fine line between being confident and being blasé. And they I think they might have went over that line a little bit in the pregame yesterday. They just got done beating Duke, and they were not screwing around. They weren't. I wasn't watching. They were throwing balls away or missing shots. The game started. They were executed perfectly against the zone, so they listened to the scouting report there. But the stuff that they really needed to get done to turn the game were gritty. It was gritty kind of stuff. It was and you know that stuff is not simply an X and O. It's we can tell you how to do how, what we want you to do, but ultimately you got to help figure out how to do it. And in the second half, they figured out how to do it a lot better. The postmen did a much better job hedging, especially Malik, and then the guards did a better job getting over the screen. And they did a better job of sitting on DeVoe's left hand. They did a very good job when the guy came on. They got the matchup that they wanted, not just letting that guy play downhill, especially Darius. You couldn't go around him. And they wound up getting some good rebounds. So, again, as I said, the things that they needed to do to win, they proved they can do. That's the thing. I always get discouraged about a team if you say, well, I know what this team needs to do to win is X, and I don't think they can do it. I don't know if it's shooters. They don't have enough shooters, or they just can't rebound, or there's not enough guys who can defend. I don't see all of that. But I'm not here to try and convince you that, you know, they were played very well the first half. They did not. Chris would be the first one to run over here and tell you they didn't. But they still show the gumption to dig down and win the game late. And this is the ACC. And while it may not be as strong with stars and you know, teams of national caliber like we've seen in the past, 5, 6, 7 teams, it's still a very good league and an extremely competitive league. And you find a way to win, that's not insignificant. They're in first place by themselves right now since Florida State didn't play yesterday. First place by themselves. Pretty good place to be 2/3 of the way through January. But, you know, we saw the collapse late last year. I don't think it's the same makeup of the team. You know, I don't expect them to run the table from here by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't think that the games that fell apart for them last year, they would allow to happen again this year, because they had games. Last night was an example, you know, where they had a lead and then the other team came back. And last year they might have just let them go run right by them. And they dug down and showed some ability, some grit. And I think that's a big, significant difference. So they have a bench that now they go 9 deep. And, you know, they now, I think, pretty much, Fred Carter, wherever you may be, they're quarter of the way through the Power Conference games, they know who they are. They're a team that they're not going to play 75 defenses. They've got to play man. You've got to dig down and make the gritty plays. You're going to have to make some adjustments in the man during the course of the game. That's only normal. They're going to have to run their break well. If they don't, it's going to put too much pressure on their half court, and their half court is not a great, you know, that's the thing they probably do most average right now is play in the half court. They run well, they defend well, they rebound well, they pass the ball well, they get a lot of assists, but they don't play in the half court especially well right now. I would not want that to be a whole 40 minutes of that. In fact, that's an area I know they keep working on, and they've got to get better, because you know, when we get to the postseason especially, it's a lot of half court plays. And you know, they called timeout last night late in the game, and again, it's right in front of us. I hear everything they're saying, and Chris is yelling at them, execute, execute. And I don't think they scored on that, and I'm sure they got a good shot. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of coaches that are like giving up on that. They just try and find a guy that they trust and put it in his hands and play isolation. This is not a great team to do that with. Now, I will say this, you know, that is definitely where David Johnson makes a difference. There's a great little play they ran that maybe they had in the playbook, but it didn't suit their personnel as well as it does when David's in the game. David, if you're looking at the basket, comes up from the baseline and sets a screen for Wara, to like a back screen, the flare screen. So Wara goes and flares to the right sideline. And David is still at the elbow, the right elbow. The ball is high in the center of the court. And that little play, all the other two players are on the left side of the court. That little play makes the defense instantly have to make a decision. The guy who's guarding Wara, who gets back screened, if he's going to help towards David, you throw it to Jordan, and Jordan's got a quick release. He's going to catch that, and he's going to bury a three. Most people are going to go with him. because that's the game plan. How do we stop Wara? He's the leading scorer. We got to get after him. So they threw it to David at the elbow, and what a little basketball camp clinic he put on. Turned and faced the basket, gave a jab step the other way, took two dribbles maybe at the most, and then just elevated and put it off the backboard going right. Beautiful basket. That is, you know, that's exactly what you, that kind of little play is what you're looking for when the game is on the line, is your most creative scorers, how they can get it in a place where they can get, you're confident they're going to get a good shot. So that's a great weapon. And it works because Jordan is such a threat from that wing, deep on the wing, that, you know, I think they tried to run that earlier with putting another shooter out there, Ryan, I think, and then Jordan was the guy in the high post. But again, Jordan, I think he prefers, he can play in the post, don't get me wrong, but I think he prefers stepping out and facing. And David, even though he's a guard, he is so good in that mid-range, putting it to the deck, taking it to the basket. That's going to be a good go-to play. And they got the ball to Steven when the game was getting wobbly, and I even said on the radio, this is the time, man, you got to pound it in there. And they did, like, I don't know, two or three times in a row, and I think they got a couple of buckets, and then he didn't come help on the ball screen like I talked about. And Chris took him out and played Malik pretty much the rest of the way. Malik got some big-time rebounds, some great hustle plays. So it wasn't a thing of beauty, and it was, you know, a first half that's eminently forgettable. Nobody's going to argue that. But, you know, the bottom line is when they needed to do the things in the game plan that you thought would turn the game against Georgia Tech, they did. And they got another win, and they're in first place. And it's not insignificant by any stretch of the imagination. We'll take a break. What is it I'm doing here? Oh, I'm supposed to tell you about No, I'll do that later. Let's just take a
ESPN's John Gasway. We'll join us on
that. We'll do that. We'll tell you who's coming up next. John Gasway. Stick around. ESPN 680-1057.
You're listening to the V-Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3 only on ESPN 680 and online at ESPNLouisville.com. You're listening to The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Universal Windows Direct is a proud sponsor of The V-Show here on ESPN 680, 105.7, and we're delighted that they are. Winter's here and cold weather's here. Keep your house warm with new windows from Universal Windows Direct. You don't want to be pumping heat that's leaking out through your builder's-grade windows. If you feel some cool air coming through your house, you need new windows. Your current windows just aren't cutting it. They leak warm air out, let the cool air in, and you pay more in energy bills. Don't suffer through one more winter in a cold, drafty home. Call my guys at Universal Windows Direct today. They have windows that are specially made to perform better in our climate. They have this outstanding aerospace technology called Super Spacer. Keeps the edge of the glass warmer, holds the window seal longer, and helps the windows last up to 5 times longer than other windows. They'll explain it in more detail if you have an in-home sales visit, because it's a fascinating thing when you don't sell windows for a living to learn about what makes a good window and why theirs is better and why that Super Spacer technology is better than other windows on the market. It's all very simple. They'll explain it to you. It makes some sense, and that's why you have the best window. The windows are within your budget. They perform better. They last longer. And it's not just one size fits all. They have a large selection of affordable, world-class windows designs from Universal Windows Direct. They're more than a replacement window company. Bill and Mike are guys over there, always back up their product with a true lifetime warranty, so you're covered for as long as you own your home and 30 years to the next homeowner. They also guarantee professional and trustworthy installers with focus and passion for what they do. Right now, buy two windows, get two windows free. Buy six windows, get six free. Buy 20, get 20 free. You get the gist. No limits. Some restrictions apply, but you will enjoy 0% financing for 36 months, and you'll have the best windows on the market. Call 502-822-5764 or go to UniversalWindowsDirect.com. Like me, you'll be saying, I love my windows. Always a pleasure, as somebody who enjoys the numbers part of the game, to get a chance to visit with John Gasway from ESPN. And there he is. John, thanks so much for joining us. You've sent written stories and sent tweets out about such interesting things. There's about 40 things I want to ask you about. But let me start with this one. The shooting percentage And the pace of play is down this year. And I don't know what are the reasons. I moved. They moved the three-point line back, sure. But you made the point that the shooting percentage is down inside the arc as well. Got any theories about what's going on there?
I think that and this is just thank you for advertising it correctly, because it's a theory until we interview all the thousands of D1 players. we're just theorizing here, but it seems that the three-point line is making itself felt on all but the elite three-point shooters, and that is throwing off the offensive routines of last year, even including angles feeding on the inside or positions on the floor where you're doing your dribble handoffs. They're all slightly different, and everything has had to adjust ever so slightly accordingly. Now, I hasten to add that some teams are doing just fine inside the arc and are lighting it up. But as a sport as a whole, the floor itself has been reconfigured. We didn't see this last time the line was moved,
right?
As far as bad two-point shooting, but we're seeing it this year, and it's not just the twos either. Turnovers are up, and it has taken a hit on offensive efficiency. But again, these are sport-wide things. Any individual game that you see could well be fine. Often is so. It's something that is making itself felt this year, and if we've learned anything from moving the line around, things will revert back to normal probably next season.
What's weird is early in the year, I think you could have made a case, again, with the theories, which is what we're talking about. The game started so early with meaningful games, like in the ACC, and they had a conference game to start their season. I mean, that's a far cry from what they did in the past. And so I think if you played tougher competition earlier, and more importantly, you were playing games earlier, you can easily make the case, well, you didn't get as much practice time, your execution on the offense is limited, maybe you don't have as many options offensively, so the defense takes away options one and two, and later on in the year you would have a 3, 4, and 5 option, but you don't have it now. And so, I mean, those are all theories that may be true and maybe they're not, but in January it's kind of hard to figure that. So when these numbers are tabulated, they're tabulated to right now, what are they through? What games?
They're up to the minute.
Oh, okay.
This is not like the old days with the RPI where we had to wait a couple of weeks. No, these include last night's games. But of course, by this time in the season, this bread is baked. I mean, we've seen we've seen hundreds of games, and this is what it is in terms of overall statistical trends. So you know, the NCAA is looking at this closely and has sent out the emails to every program summarizing these, and they are what they are. I'm not tremendously concerned. Well, I'm not concerned at all, because these are short, small order changes, you know, on the vast backdrop of the sport itself. Nothing compared to what we saw with introducing a shot clock.
But you know what, John? Speaking of shot clock, I think that's a factor, because now on an offensive rebound, you only get 20. You don't get 30. So you can't – teams last year would get a rebound, be able to throw it all the way out, reset their offense, start it all over. Now they have to play on that second possession, if you will, sometimes a little faster than they're accustomed to. I'll bet you that contributes to something as well, don't you think?
Yeah, this is a case where the different palates will disagree about what basketball flavors they prefer. I am fine with that. I mean, 20 seconds.
You know, I like it too. Don't get me wrong. I like the rule. I'm just saying it may translate to a lower percentage.
What teams have when they bring the ball up anyway, unless they're doing a fast break. That's about what they have to run their half court. So that used to drive me silently crazy when I'd see a team get an offensive rebound and say, you know, now we can take it all the way down for 30 seconds, or even, you know, a few years ago, 35. So I'm all for it. Early in the season, I felt like I did see some teams not understanding that they had to be a little quicker than they had been. But you're right, that definitely can be an influence.
ESPN's John Gasaway is with us. Here's something else I was really eager to talk to you about, because obviously you know very well, and the listeners will know very well. I mean, Rick Pitino's defensive theory was get as many deflections as you can, force turnovers, and Chris Max is, I mean, about as diametrically opposite of that as you can be. They don't even chart deflections. He doesn't want to encourage them to take unnecessary. At the way they play, it's not unusual for them to make more turnovers than their opponent, not because they make up a lot of turnovers, but because they generally don't force a lot from their opponent. So I'm looking at this. This is a relatively recent post of yours on Twitter, I think, about opponent turnover percentage. And it's, you know, you'd say, okay, well, maybe I can get something from this. Well, you look at the Big Ten, and boy, the teams that have the good opposing turnover percentage, some of the really good ones are up there. And then some of them that are the worst are like Michigan State's third from the bottom. You know, so, but their defensive rebounding percentage is among the best in the league. So, and, you know, Purdue, it leads them in turnover percentage, and some of the metrics numbers are very generous to Purdue, but they've been unranked for much of the year. So please help me make sense of that chart.
Yeah, there's no sense to be made because you can achieve great defense either way. Michigan State has always been the most extreme case. A couple years ago in particular, their opponent's turnover rate was historically low. It was incredible how rarely they turned the ball over. But Michigan State's always pretty good to very good on defense because they force so many misses. For the older listeners, back in the day, Jim Calhoun, UConn teams almost took it as a point of pride that it was beneath them to try and force you into turnovers. You know, they wanted you to hold onto the ball so they could block your shot. You know, that was more fun. And nobody can dispute that those were great defenses. At the other end of the scale, it's not just Rick Pitino. Obviously, for the last 5 years or so, we've seen Bob Huggins consistently getting it done with a ton of turnovers and a lot of pressure, and they're doing it again this year. In fact, it's at its best when, as with the Mountaineers this year, not only do they force turnovers, but then they've got two really formidable guys in the paint, and Oscar Tshiebwe and Derek Culver, who, even if you don't turn it over, your fun is just beginning. So you can skin this cat either way and get it done, but coaches clearly have their preferences, and they tend to stick to them.
John Gasway is with us here on the V Show on ESPN 680 1057. You and Ken Palm are adding fuel to the guy who precedes me here on the airwaves, who has said for a long time it's not hard to win on the road. I think that's a little overstating it. I think it's still harder to win on the road than it is at home. But you have talked about, and Ken's talked about, the diminishing home court advantage. And there are some reasons, and I don't know if they're theories or facts or a combination of both, about why that is. Why is that?
Well, it depends on what time scale you're looking at. In the micro scale this year, it's all about luck of the draw.
And, right, right.
You know, the ACC has a terrible home winning, and of course we're speaking only of conference play here. Obviously, the teams that you choose to schedule then has an enormous impact on your winning percentage. But just in conference play, the ACC is doing terrible at home, and the Big Ten famously is doing historically well. But that's just, you know, it can fall either way, and there's no real year-to-year carryover within the conferences as far as their home teams doing well or not doing well. And I know, I just looked at this the other day to write about it. I looked at it for the past 20 years, and literally the Ivy for a few years ago had the best home winning percentage in Division I 1 year, and then next they had the worst. So,
wow, really?
That's how much this can vary. And then we can talk about why, you know, 70 years ago, home court advantage used to be huge, and today it's nothing, relatively speaking. If we could bring somebody from that long ago through time travel, they would look at us and laugh and say, this is nothing. Back in the day, refs really did used to be homers, and travel was much, much tougher than it is today, and the home court advantage was huge.
Talking to John Gasway here on the V Show on ESPN 680, I hesitate to ask you this in seriousness because you do a very good job of taking on issues or, you know, questions that then you can do research on and bring a lot to the table. My guess is you haven't done any research on this, so I don't know if you'd even have an opinion. But, well, because the discussion here in Louisville is, you know, they have won some games and they haven't been extremely impressive for the whole 40 minutes doing it. And I made a contention that this year, the college basketball landscape, everybody's so bunched up. The bottom line is they're still winning those games. They're in first place in the ACC by themselves. And then people point out, and this is the one, kind of the net in the volleyball game going back and forth of the discussion. Yeah, but they were exactly at this point last year, and then they really fell apart late. Is there any reason to speculate why that would be a possibility of a repeating itself, or the opposite, that there's reason to be more confident this year? And I know, as I said, you haven't done research on that, so maybe it's off the top of your head, or maybe you don't even want to delve into that, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you.
The fall apart late theory, because that's what happened to my team before, sounds like word for word, chapter and verse, how I feel about my team. I mean, I know my team is doomed. I can't possibly get my hopes up. They're just gonna step on my heart and crush it into a million pieces. I'm right there with you. I mean, that's a page ripped from my life. But in the meantime, I would just note that, you know, those wins in ACC play for Louisville, they're in the books. You know, they happen. They're not going anywhere. And they give the Cardinals an advantage in terms of not only conference standings, but in terms of seeding for the NCAA tournament. So, you know, take it and go. To this point in the ACC competition, it's true. Louisville is not the best offense in the league and not the best defense. They're just the best overall team in terms of wins and losses, and that is nothing to sneeze at. So hopefully the voodoo will not recur for a second straight year, and the Cardinals will hold on to this lead and get it done.
People are talking that it's not the best year in the ACC, and it's not. I mean, by one group of numbers, I think Sagarin has them as the fourth best conference. I don't know what Ken Pom does. I don't know where you do. But how much is the Big Ten the best conference? I'm going to guess the answer is yes. And if so, by how much, and where does the ACC come in the landscape?
The Big Ten is the best conference top to bottom. But I would hasten to add, I'm not sure that I can see a national championship contender at the top of that league. It's just that they are going to absolutely flood, you know, present trends continue, flood the NCAA bracket with as many as nine or plus teams. They are that deep and that strong in programs that are ranked somewhere between like 10 and 40 or so. So yeah, that's impressive, and that's tops. And I think fourth is about right for the ACC. Which it's funny how these discussions work. The Pac-12 most years would kill to be fourth.
Right.
With the ACC, we moan and wail and say, "Oh, it's a down." It is a down year. I mean, you don't have Virginia at risk of not making the tournament, and North Carolina foreordained seemingly to definitely not make the tournament. And not have a down year for your conference, because those are two perennial national championship contenders. That is hitting the bottom line for the ACC. And you've got Louisville, you've got Duke, you've got Florida State. And after that, a pretty large body of question marks.
Well, the time flies when you join us. I had like 40 other things we could talk about, but the top of the hour comes and they say we must move on. So, John, come visit with us again. It's always great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, John Gasway from ESPN helping us break down the numbers. I'm sorry, UK fans, I didn't really get to ask him about the SEC and about UK. It wasn't by design. We just, as I said, are at 12:59, and that means we have to get a legal ID and move on. But that gives us reason to have him back again, so we will. And we'll look forward to talking with him then. So, meantime, we'll take a short time out and come back as we roll on here on this Thursday on ESPN 680-1057.
You're listening.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.